You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the October 2024 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's the continuation of the cover story, Both Sides Now by Johanna Desta, with photos by Emma Summerton, styled by Dina Giannini. Gomez says she signed on to Emilia Perez largely because of Gascon, who plays the drug lord both before her transition and after, pulling off a riveting dual performance. She actually carried the whole film, and we followed her lead when it came to anything sensitive, Gomez says. She challenged me, and some of our scenes, she wasn't afraid to get in my face, and I loved it because I had to match that energy. Both Gascon and Saldana offered their services if Gomez ever needed help with the dialogue. The film is almost entirely in Spanish, and while they are native speakers, Gomez herself is not. Speaking it is not too terrible for me, but I'm not fluent. I would say that I'm okay. She grew up speaking Spanish, but lost fluency around the time she turned 7, and that purple dinosaur came into her life. I got my first job, and everything was English-dominated. The musical part of Emilia Perez came easier. Gomez dove into the singing and the often intense choreography, which meant tapping back into her pop persona. I can sing Spanish really well, she says, having released several songs in Spanish, including the 2021 EP Revelacion. She enjoyed recording the songs for this film, which were written by French singer and lyricist Camille with Clément Ducot, but wants fans to know she doesn't have plans to release any new music of her own at the moment. I don't know if I'm ready, you know, she says. It's a vulnerable space. Acting has always been my first love. Music is just a hobby that went out of control. Now, it is a part of who I am, so I don't think I'm going anywhere. I'm just not ready yet. She's still keeping tabs on the pop landscape. Gomez got a kick out of Charlie XCX's Brat, particularly the bonus track, Spring Breakers, naturally, and she's going to see shows whenever she can. I love female artists, she says. I've been to all the girls' concerts, Billy, Dua, and of course, she can always pick up the phone and call Taylor Swift, a longtime friend. She is really like a big sister to me, she says. They talk about the industry from time to time, with Gomez seeking advice on music or how to navigate new friendships at their respective levels of fame. More often than not, though, they're just gossiping about the things that all friends gossip about and comparing notes on the latest season of Vanderpump Rules. I'm on the valley now, Gomez says, referring to the latest and deeply haunted spin-off of the Bravo reality series. I've watched every episode of Vanderpump, so I don't care if it's bad. Whenever she is ready to record her own music again, Gomez also has a direct line to one of pop music's most prolific producers, Benny Blanco. The two collaborated on the 2015 hit Same Old Love and the slinky 2019 track I Can't Get Enough, featuring Tiny and J Balvin. In the music video for the latter song, Gomez wears silky pajamas and dances on an oversized bed. Blanco dances alongside her in a giant teddy bear suit. The two were just friends at the time, but things took a turn for the romantic in July 2023. At first, the pair were relatively low-key, but they've since elevated to full-tilt public adoration, sharing mushy Instagram photos and captions of one another. In his most recent public display of affection, Blanco shared a Tinder throwback photo of him and Gomez on the I Can't Get Enough set. I used to play a teddy bear in your music video, and now I get to be yours in real life. Though they've worked together for years, fans seemed surprised that the two were dating, partly because Gomez is laid back, while Blanco, who produced hits like Katy Perry's Teenage Dream and Rihanna's Diamonds, is a world-class yapper. Whatever the connection is, his brash, enthusiastic openness, paired with her dry humor, it clearly works. "I've never been loved this way," Gomez tells me. "He's just been a light, a complete light in my life. He's my best friend. I love telling him everything." In May, Howard Stern told Blanco that he hoped the two of them would get married. "You and me both," Blanco replied. Gomez smiles at the thought of Blanco saying it so bluntly and openly. "He can't lie," she says. "After the interview, I was dying laughing. Like anything else he wanted to put out there?" Engagement rumors were flying as this story went to press. But to be clear, marriage isn't an institution that Gomez ever wanted to rush into. Her mother gave birth to her when she was 16, and her parents were only married for a few years. "It was hard on me," she says. "They were kids, so we were all growing up together." Even before she began dating Blanco, though, Gomez had a firm plan in place to start a family by the age of 35. "Before I met my boyfriend, I was single for 5 years, with the exception of going on a few dates," she says. "And I was like, okay, if this is the vibe, then what is the most important thing to me? Family." In the past, Gomez has said she would be open to adopting children, partly inspired by the fact that her mother was adopted. "If she hadn't been, I probably wouldn't be here. I don't know what her life would have been like. She and I are very thankful for how life played out." The theme of family pops up again and again during our conversation. Gomez is a godmother to her cousin Priscilla's 2 children, so she gets a front row seat to the wonderful and sometimes brutal experience of being a parent. "She keeps it real," Gomez says of her cousin's candor. She's speaking excitedly about this, then briefly pauses. All this talk of motherhood, it's reminding her of something that's been weighing on her. "I haven't ever said this," she says, "but I unfortunately can't carry my own children. I have a lot of medical issues that would put my life and the baby's in jeopardy. That was something I had to grieve for a while." Gomez communicates this calmly and without sentimentality. "It's not necessarily the way I envisioned it," she says, "of becoming a parent one day. I thought it would happen the way it happens for everyone. But I'm in a much better place with that. I find it a blessing that there are wonderful people willing to do surrogacy or adoption, which are both huge possibilities for me. It made me really thankful for the other outlets for people who are dying to be moms. I'm one of those people. I'm excited for what that journey will look like. But it'll look a little different. At the end of the day, I don't care. It'll be mine. It'll be my baby." Her family isn't pressuring her into marriage, by the way, nor is she pressuring Blanco. "We always make sure we're protecting what we have, but there's no rules," she says. "I want him to always be himself. I always want to be myself." She means that in another way, too. "I'm not changing my name no matter what. I am Selena Gomez. That's it." Gomez has been managing not just her personal life in full public view for years, but her health as well, particularly since 2013, when she was diagnosed with lupus. She first spoke about her diagnosis in an interview with Billboard in 2015, sharing that she underwent chemotherapy to treat the chronic autoimmune illness, which causes the body's immune system to attack healthy tissue and can cause inflammation and affect internal organs. Gomez was on her first solo tour, Stars Dance, when she was diagnosed, and had gotten through nearly 60 shows before she had to cancel the rest and get treatment. In 2017, Gomez revealed on Instagram that she had gotten a kidney transplant, sharing a photo of herself and close friend actor Francia Raisa, who donated the vital organ. Pardon me, that name is properly pronounced Francia Raisa. There aren't words to describe how I can possibly thank my beautiful friend Francia Raisa, Gomez wrote in her caption. She gave me the ultimate gift and sacrifice by donating her kidney to me. I am incredibly blessed. I love you so much, sis. The post was surprising and frank. It included photos of Gomez and Raisa on hospital beds holding hands, as well as close-ups of Gomez's post-surgery scar. The news went viral to such an extent that people who couldn't name a Selena Gomez album suddenly had thoughts about her kidney. Later, the news that Gomez and Raisa's friendship had been badly fractured by hurt feelings went viral, too. Just one example of what it means to be the most followed woman in the world. Late last year, the pair did the necessary repair work and are friends once more. While Gomez was dealing with lupus, she was also contending with serious mental health struggles, which got a close-up in the shattering 2022 documentary My Mind and Me. The movie, directed by Alec Kashishkin, who made the legendary Madonna Truth or Dare, was originally meant to be a fun, artful way to capture Gomez's 2016 revival tour, but it quickly morphed as she began struggling with panic attacks, anxiety, and debilitating depression. At one point, she's like, "I don't want to be alive right now," her former assistant, Teresa Marie Mingus, says in the documentary. "I don't want to live." It was one of those moments where you look her in her eyes and there's nothing there. It was just pitch black. Gomez later attributed the devastation to the side effects of lupus. Shortly thereafter, she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder as well. The tour was canceled, but her mental health did not improve, and she suffered a breakdown in 2018. My Mind and Me is such a revealing document of pain that Gomez says she got cold feet a few weeks before it was set to be released. I asked my team if it was possible to pull out, she tells me. Lawyers got involved, but we never took it to Apple because everything was locked. When the movie came out, I didn't look at anything for a few days, and then I was scared to leave the house. She was paralyzed by the thought of the movie being out in the world, but found her footing again, partly because fans facing similar battles shared their stories with her. I just started to embrace it, she says, and I felt like it was a really good thing. However, she continues, determined to add a postscript, I like to remind people that that is definitely nowhere close to where I am now. My mind was not right and chemically imbalanced, and it was really difficult. People were calling me a victim. That frustrates me because being vulnerable is actually one of the strongest things you can do. That narrative is not going to take over my life. I'm grateful every day, and I have my days like everyone else, but I'm no victim. I just survived a lot. There isn't a part of me that wants anyone to feel sorry for me. Gomez is still on a journey with her mental health, but now has tools and protocols to take care of herself. She loves using temperature as a healing mechanism and finds cold water or space heaters to be soothing at different times. She'll also do a mental exercise that's hugely helpful. I remind myself that I'm okay. I ground myself for a moment. Where am I? I'm sitting down in the office. Everybody that I love is out there. There's food. I can get something to eat. I can take a nap here before I leave. I put myself into the present. I'm ready for it all. It's just now I'm properly medicated, she adds with a laugh. Gomez donates a portion of sales from all rare beauty products to the Rare Impact Fund, a philanthropic hub that aims to raise $100 million for organizations dedicated to educating young people around the world about mental health and getting them services. The fund has raised $15 million since its launch. Only around 2% of global health funding has historically gone to mental health, says Elise Cohen, the president of the fund and an executive vice president of Rare Beauty. And currently, just about 0.5% of philanthropic funding is given to mental health. When you think about the prevalence of this issue and how low the mobilization of funding is, there's just such a severe gap. For us, it's really about making a difference in the space. I know it seems impossible, Gomez says, of the staggering $100 million goal, but it's important to me because it's a crisis. There are a lot of people from every part of the world dealing with so much who are not properly educated on it and don't know where to go. I want it to be accessible. There's Planned Parenthood. That's a resource for women. I wish we had a version of that for mental health. It would be so powerful if someone was, not to be too heavy, but to try to take their life and then decided to go to a Planned Parenthood type of facility that was free. I have big dreams for what I would like to see. The next time I speak to Gomez, it's at the tail end of July, just after her 32nd birthday and her dual Emmy nods. She's preparing for life to get intense again, with promotion duties for both Emilia Perez and the upcoming season of Only Murders in the Building. The Emmy-winning series is now on its fourth season on Hulu, but the unlikely trio of amateur murder sleuths, Steve Martin and Martin Short, as overly dramatic older men, and Gomez as their sarcastic young neighbor, remains supernaturally funny. Short has said he was nervous about meeting Gomez, expecting an unapproachable diva. Instead, he and Martin met a disarming woman, excited to work with them and able to hold her own in their esteemed company. I talked to Martin and Short about Gomez on a joint Zoom call, and if you've never seen Only Murders, this will give you a pretty good idea of the vibe. I thought she was very smart, says Martin. I hadn't really seen her act. I didn't know her shows. But, you know, Marty and I tend to overact. That's kind of our comedic style. Hold on, hold on, Short says, interrupting. I meant that as a compliment, Martin replies. Oh, I see. Keep going, Short says. Somebody else might think, oh, I have to compete with that, so I better be really, really funny, too, Martin continues. But she didn't go there in any way. Her point in the triangle was perfectly leveled. She is really good. Her energy and tone. What do you think when it comes to me? Short says. On and on they go, shooting jokes back and forth. Gomez laughs when I tell her about the conversation later. It's a blast, isn't it? She says. It's like the show. They've changed my life and perspective on tons of things. She's become comfortable getting in on the jokes, butting in to land some punchlines of her own. Marty and I have a riff we just do naturally, which is to deeply insult each other, Martin says. Selena was very polite for the first year, and then the second year she started to get into it and give as good as she got. Gomez is particularly excited about the fourth season because of the show's meta quality. It follows the trio from New York to Los Angeles after a Hollywood executive decides to turn their story into a film. Eva Longoria plays Selena's character, Mabel, to hilarious effect. The fourth season also sees the return of Meryl Streep as Loretta, a working actor who is starting to make a name for herself. It's funny to think that, though Gomez is far younger than her co-stars, she's already an industry veteran herself, having worked for 25 years. Only Murders feels like the balancing force she needed after forging through the last few years in particular. She clearly feels balanced in other ways, too, which allows her to handle all the work required to be everything she is. It's as simple as this, she tells me. I don't want people to ever think I'm not grateful for what I have. Give and let give. Melinda French Gates is speaking out for the rights of women and girls, embracing her role as godmother to her fellow philanthropist, and getting political, even when it's a little uncomfortable. For Vanity Fair, French Gates opens up about her next act and highlights six other women charting their own paths of generosity, like Isaiah Weir. Opening photo of Melinda French Gates by Sebastian Kim. Dallas, 1982. A young woman with ample ambition gave a prophetic valediction to her graduating class at Ursuline Academy. If you are successful, it is because somewhere, sometime, someone gave you a life or an idea that started you in the right direction. Remember also that you are indebted to life until you help some less fortunate person, just as you were helped. There's something to be said for beginning with an ending. Closed door, open window, as they say. The first time I meet this young woman, now the philanthropist Melinda French Gates, in a studio high above Manhattan's financial district, she's barreling toward the end of her fifth decade. She's also 3 years out from her divorce from Bill Gates amid a pandemic in which their foundation became the controversial global face of COVID response and vaccine development. The second time we speak, a few months later, she has announced her departure from the foundation so that she might funnel her time and $12.5 billion into improving the welfare of women and families, the mission of her company, Pivotal Ventures. It may be a new era of valediction for French Gates, but she still evokes a high-achieving student departing her hometown with a sense that the best is yet to come. Is it too on the nose to note that French Gates' request as the soundtrack to her shoot and, suggested by her daughter Phoebe, the triumphant breakup anthems of the tortured poets department? Or that the day before, when she was photographed with a glittering Van Cleef & Arpels band on her left ring finger, tabloid headlines blared news of an engagement. But that it turns out she's not even dating that guy anymore. And furthermore, she tells me, the ring was actually a gift from herself to herself. That's when I start to ask her when she made the purchase. She answers breezily, "I think I bought it 3 years ago." Giving away money your family will never need is not an especially noble act, French Gates wrote in her new giving pledge letter, which she released solo in 2021. She and Gates wrote their original founding note in 2010, when they, together with their close friend Warren Buffett, agreed to donate the majority of their copious wealth, most of it through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. In a 2008 Fortune cover story, French Gates' first major profile, Buffett described the pair, calling Gates smart as hell, obviously, but in terms of seeing the whole picture, she's smarter. To me, he calls her a longtime friend, saying, "I very much admire what she is doing for women around here and around the world." In that same profile, Gates said of his philanthropic partnership with his then wife, "I don't think it would be fun to do on my own, and I don't think I'd do as much of it." The month after the Gateses announced their divorce, Buffett resigned as a trustee of the foundation. Shortly after French Gates's resignation, Buffett told the Wall Street Journal that he had amended his will, which leaves his fortune to a charitable trust overseen by his three children. The foundation, since its inception, has reportedly disbursed $77.6 billion in charitable aid across the globe. The story of the former couple's fortune has been as widely disseminated over the years. French Gates, though, has been more private. Her mother was a homemaker, her father an aerospace engineer. "They worked so hard to get us where we are," she says now. While attending her Catholic girls' school, its Latin motto, Serium, or I Will Serve, she learned the programming language BASIC on her dad's Apple II and went on to earn her bachelor's and MBA from Duke. She took a job as marketing manager at Microsoft in 1987 at age 22. She has described the culture there at the time as acerbic, and at a business dinner, she sat next to the CEO, 9 years her senior and a newly minted billionaire. They started dating, marrying in 1994. French Gates left Microsoft in 1996, Upon the birth of the couple's eldest daughter, Jennifer, to raise their eventual three children. The foundation soon became its own time-consuming venture. Pick your target, Buffett advised the Gateses early on. Once you pick your target, French Gates explains, it will help the other things to drop away. Quickly, their targets became preventable sickness and disease in the developing world, and education stateside. It was French Gates who read a New York Times article about children in developing nations dying of rotavirus, malaria, and tuberculosis, which she put on Gates's desk, and French Gates, who, while volunteering in Seattle schools, saw the need for education reform. Still, if I went into a president or prime minister's office and I was with my ex-husband, they would turn to him first, she says. Unless I interrupted the conversation, they could have just kept going for the whole meeting. Frustrated, French Gates, who describes herself as a challenger, took to speaking first in meetings to ensure she'd be heard. I get that he was well known and did great things in the tech industry, but why would they assume I knew less than him about philanthropy when we had been doing it together for almost 25 years? Why make that false assumption? That really was sexism. In the early years of the foundation, we just didn't understand the role that gender played, French Gates says, but things just kept coming up for women, contraceptives, or their health, or what they wanted, that it started to make me realize we were making a mistake. If you came out with a new innovation, you couldn't assume it got into the hands of men and women equally. Modern American philanthropy finds its urtext in steel magnate Andrew Carnegie's 1889, The Gospel of Wealth. The man of wealth, Carnegie wrote, should become the agent and trustee for his poorer brethren, bringing to their service his superior wisdom, experience, and ability to administer, doing for them better than they would or could do for themselves. There have been critics of Carnegie's The Rich Know Best model since its publication, but in recent years, as American poverty levels rise and structural inequality persist, despite sustained increases in philanthropic donations, questions about the efficacy of strategic giving have grown louder. Wealthy donors often lacked the lived experience to understand the problems they attempt to solve, and may sidestep deeper solutions that undermine their own wealth and privilege, reads an extensive report published by the nonprofit FSG co-founder Mark Kramer and political columnist Steve Phillips in the Stanford Social Innovation Review this summer. French Gates herself cites a major oversight at their foundation. In the early days, she says, we knew that the biggest killers of children were pneumonia and diarrhea. And so as we worked on these vaccines, we eventually got them out there. But we didn't talk to the industry players about the size of the packaging. The vaccine boxes were too large to store in the refrigerators available to recipients. You have to think all the way down the line about those problems. An essay accompanying the 2020 Smithsonian exhibition, Giving in America, which the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation helped support, mapped the complex historical landscape. Americans practicing the act of giving have tackled prejudice and racism, economic disparities, and the human suffering they cause, sometimes tentatively and sometimes head-on, writes Amanda B. Moniz, the Smithsonian's curator of philanthropy. On the flip side, the history of philanthropy also reveals how the practice can reflect and reinforce inequity. There is enormous precarity associated with tethering personal wealth to problem solving, subject as it is to the whims of the rarefied few. A New York Times report, for instance, recently described the charitable giving of the world's richest person, Elon Musk, as haphazard and largely self-serving. The foundation that houses the money has failed in recent years to give away the bare minimum required by law to justify the tax break. Gaining traction is an approach that allows communities in need to determine for themselves how funds are used through mutual aid and unrestricted grants, for instance, as well as channeling giving into ventures that will lead to substantive systemic change. Recent success engaging voters in Georgia, Arizona, and other states, write Kramer and Phillips, demonstrates that philanthropy can mobilize voters and empower the population to elect a more representative government that passes policies to benefit everyone. This aligns with tactics French Gates is now embracing. My approach to philanthropy has always been data-driven, and I think it's important for philanthropists to set ambitious goals and measure our progress against those goals, she wrote in her new pledge letter. I've learned, however, that it's equally important to place trust in the people and organizations we partner with and let them define success on their own terms. Philanthropists are generally more helpful to the world when we're standing behind a movement rather than trying to lead our own. One of the most important attributes she looks for when hiring for pivotal ventures, she says, is that the candidate is humble. We are stepping into communities where the community knows far more than we do about a space. The team that I have around me and will continue to hire for has to have a lot of humility. She's also, for the record, not interested in perpetuating the performative habits of apparently tireless CEOs, calling the idea of minimizing sleep so dumb. She aims for 7 or 8 hours. Of the men she has encountered who claim to sleep 3 or 4 hours a night, some of us didn't want to be around them, let's be honest. In 2015, unlike the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, French Gates founded Pivotal Ventures as a limited liability company, which, while typically not tax-exempt and lacking the mandated transparency of a foundation, can lobby and participate in partisan political activity. In 2022, she added the Pivotal Philanthropies Foundation to her arsenal, a 501c3 nonprofit arm to aid in grant-making. The relationship between charitable giving and politics and women has interesting historical precedent. Emily Bissell, a leading philanthropist over a century ago, was a staunch anti-suffragist because she believed government was men's work, while women's power was best wielded without political entanglements, but also because she worried that black women gaining the vote would loosen the stranglehold wealthy white women held on that power. I wanted to be able to use every tool in my toolbox, French Gates says, some philanthropic dollars, investment dollars, and to be able to speak about policy. The LLC gives me a lot of flexibility to do that. This spring, French Gates announced her second billion-dollar funding round through Pivotal and began to release what will total $200 million in flexible grants, including to the National Women's Law Center, the Center for Reproductive Rights, and the nonprofit newsroom centering on women and queer people, the 19th. French Gates' strategy at Pivotal couples data with lived experience. In 2023, her team met with 6 women and 1 non-binary lawmaker, New York State Senator Samra Brooke and Lee Webb, Arizona State Representative Lorena Austin, and Florida State Representative Michelle Rayner among them, to discuss specific issues facing individual politicians. Brooke, the second sitting New York State Senator to give birth in the last 50 years, seems to be on French Gates' mind when we speak. Here's a profile of Sisi Masiwa, with photograph by Junie Woodward. Location, UK, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Uganda. Philanthropies, Higher Life Foundation Delta Philanthropies, Masana Oa Africa. Mission, support from education to disaster readiness. Physically, spiritually, mentally, I'm part of these communities, says Sisi Masiwa, who is originally from Zimbabwe. Masiwa co-founded Higher Life Foundation with her husband, Strave, in 1996. Her ethos? Go where the people are. Listen to their stories and co-create solutions together. Her efforts were initially spurred by Zimbabwe's HIV/AIDS crisis. We did not wake up with money and say we are going into philanthropy. It had nothing to do with money. It was a burden and a cause. French Gates met Masiwa nearly a decade ago. To see her over the years, French Gates says how she's doing her work. I'm so impressed with her and how she's gone about it. Masiwa's newest venture, Masana Wa Africa, The Warmth of the Sun, embraces Africa in Sikshanga. A grant-giving body focuses on small community-based organizations that may be overlooked given their scale. We think these are the forgotten champions. Let's say you have a child, but Albany is 2 hours away and you're breastfeeding. Who's going to take that baby? The process, she says, is no different from how she began investing in venture capital, where she sought out women and people of color to learn what it was like to run the gauntlet. I had no idea how bad it was, but the trends were extraordinarily similar. From these conversations came ways forward. How do we help overcome those barriers? Paid family leave has become a major initiative for which Pivotal Ventures has partnered with such organizations as the Bipartisan Policy Center and Moms Rising. So that a woman who is a politician gets time off at the birth of her child, she needs it. And quite frankly, the man needs it too. In America, many new fathers granted paid parental leave take less time off than they're offered. This, French Gates says, negatively impacts parents who take the full amount. Seeing shared parenting on trips to Sweden with the Gates Foundation, she realized, when you have a policy in place for 30 years, it changes the norm. Beyond paid leave, French Gates is supporting organizations like the National Domestic Workers Alliance and Caring Across Generations, which are working to build a more holistic, equitable care system. Child care, yes, but care for the elderly and those with disabilities, too. Her personal wealth remains, she says, surreal. With it, I feel a great responsibility. But it doesn't feel like a weight. The weighty part is when you go out in the field and you see the needs of people on the ground. You see how they're struggling to make ends meet. A single mom whose mother gets sick, who used to be her child care for her four-month-old baby, that's what's hard. But to French Gates, there are answers to hard issues if you ask the right questions. What can philanthropic dollars and or investment dollars and or good government policy or government resources, what can they do to help support that mom? Next profile with photograph by Megan Gindy. Carly Kloss. Location, virtual, U.S. and international camps, Midwest. Philanthropies. CADE with Clossy Gateway Coalition. Mission, provide technical skills for youth. Ensure access to abortions and wraparound care. Code with Clossy, the free coding camp for girls and gender-expansive teens, has seen exponential growth since its founding in 2015. It's this ecosystem. Supermodel, philanthropist, and founder Carly Kloss says, and a self-sustaining one. Hundreds of alums return to the camp as instructor assistants. With 3,000 scholars from 90 countries in attendance this summer, both in person and virtually, the influence has rippled into multiple curricula, a teacher training program, and supporting alums as they prepare to enter the workforce. She's out there making sure that girls get a chance to fall in love with tech, says French Gates, and not only see themselves in this industry, but become leaders of it. For me, it's really, how are we thinking about the whole person in this conversation, Kloss says. Though the two efforts of Code with Clossy and Gateway Coalition do not overlap, this holistic view of the individual drives both initiatives. We didn't want to reinvent the wheel, Kloss says of Gateway, because so many great people have been in this space for a very long time. That we live in a society in which wealth disparity can be so vast, in which billionaires can exist at all, seems like a sure sign that something is broken. I leave changing the system on this to other people. Because it's a huge policy issue, French Gates says, but when that policy passes, it doesn't change my actions. Washington State implemented a 7% capital gains tax for high earners in 2021. The same year, French Gates permanently moved out of the 66,000-square-foot lakeside complex known as Xanadu 2.0 in Seattle's Nadana that she previously shared with Gates and into an undisclosed neighborhood where she's pleased to finally be able to walk to stores and restaurants. I'm not moving from Washington State because there's capital gains tax. I took a big hit on it. That's what's right for society. French Gates advocated for widespread capital gains taxes in 2020. A Republican-led initiative to repeal the tax is on Washington State ballots in November. Next profile is of Carrie Tuna with photograph by Matthew Scott. Location, San Francisco. Philanthropy is Good Ventures Open Philanthropy. Mission, improve the lives of as many people as possible by helping humanity thrive. In Carrie Tuna's assessment, the issues governments and companies aren't paying enough attention to are an opening for impact. Philanthropy, at its best, identifies society's blind spots, Tuna says. Originally a San Francisco-based Wall Street Journal reporter, she left the paper in 2011 to start Good Ventures. Approaching her first year, much like a reporter would. I talked to hundreds of people across philanthropy, nonprofits, government, science, academia, trying to learn about the landscape. You can really see how her experience as a journalist has informed her approach, French Gates says of Tuna. She's rigorous about looking at the data and figuring out how to be as effective as possible. Once connected with GiveWell, she launched Open Philanthropy, a grant-making and philanthropic advisory organization. As you see more people coming into philanthropy, more people coming in at a younger age, I do hope we see more approaches, says Tuna. More people challenging the status quo, challenging the traditional ways of doing philanthropy, and thinking really hard about how to use this privilege responsibly. For decades, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and its eponymous founders steered mostly clear of partisan politics and causes. A legal mandate for the foundation and one of opportunists for the Gateses. French Gates's individual political donations straddle the aisle. In 2018, she gave $2,700 each to then-Missouri Republican Senator Roy Blunt and Washington Democratic Senator Patty Murray. The following year, she and Gates received the George W. Bush Medal for Distinguished Leadership, presented by the former President and First Lady. A month later, former President Barack Obama surprised her on her book tour with a recorded skit in which he pledged to help French Gates support girls. But this spring, French Gates made her first ever presidential endorsement for Joe Biden. The time was right, she tells me, because she believes a second term with Donald Trump would be dangerous to reproductive rights and gender parity. In response to her endorsement, Musk tweeted, "Might be the downfall of Western civilization." French Gates saw the post. I think it was silly. In July, when Biden announced he wouldn't seek re-election, French Gates waited only 2 days before publicly endorsing Vice President Kamala Harris, with whom she's worked several times, including on an agriculture initiative leading up to Harris's 2023 visit to Africa. They were seated together at a state dinner this year. "We are like-minded on many issues," French Gates tells me, when we speak the week of Harris's historic step-up. And they are. From paid family leave to reproductive rights. I'm not specific about any candidate, how much money I put behind her campaign, she says, but I absolutely will support her. French Gates rattles off a list of superlatives about Harris: energetic, dedicated, smart. I could not have been more proud of the current president, Joe Biden, she adds. What he did, the courage and the humility to say, okay, I need to pass the baton. The time has come. He has worked so hard for this country over so many years, but it takes courage to step aside. He did the right thing for the country. Next profile, with photograph by Megan Gindy, is of Ann Wojcicki. Location, San Francisco and Los Altos, California. Philanthropies, Breakthrough Prize in Life Sciences, Ann Wojcicki Foundation. Mission, celebrate and advance knowledge of scientific achievements. We can almost look at philanthropy like starting a company, Ann Wojcicki says. I can start projects that are of great interest, and I can try to shift society. The 23andMe CEO co-founded and sits on the board alongside Priscilla Chan and Mark Zuckerberg, Sergey Brin and Yuri and Julia Milner of the Breakthrough Prize, an annual award for which laureates each receive $3 million, more than twice the purse of the Nobel Prize. We should reward people for, you did something amazing recently. Wojcicki's aim to make the science relatable reflects French Gates' admiration for the CEO. I love how she talks about the example that her mom set for her. She taught Anne early on that if she didn't like something, then she should go out and try to change it. Anyone can be a scientist, Wojcicki says. It's not that elitist. Oh, it's only for white coats and certain types of people. What's fun, she says, is getting kids to recognize that potential. After years of keeping quiet on partisan issues, it feels right to use my voice in this way, because we have places in society that we need to get. Quite honestly, we're behind other high-income countries. And so now, in particular, to have a candidate like Kamala in the race, she says, pausing, she sees the issues society faces today. She's not an old school, let's have all males at the table. She sees what working couples are going through, male and female. We have to remind people that he stacked the Supreme Court to do exactly what happened, she says of Trump. We had a law on the books for over 40 years that got rolled back. For French Gates, a practicing Catholic, the issue of abortion has been complicated. To even endorse contraceptives back in 2012, she says, was a big decision for me. She spoke with her parents and her kids. She did a study of the Catholic Church in partnership with professors from Notre Dame. I really wrestled with it, but at the end of the day, I just saw too much death in the developing world, and women saying, I can't have another child because I can't feed it. I already have five. To me, you have to weigh the equation. And so I finally said, well, okay, this is a man-made religion. I use contraceptives. I believe in them. So I need to speak my truth. And ultimately, I did. Still, in 2014, in a blog post for the foundation that has since been removed from the website, she wrote that the emotional and personal debate about abortion is threatening to get in the way of the life-saving consensus regarding basic family planning, noting that the Gates Foundation had decided not to fund abortion measures. A decade later, to me, she says, when you have a law on the books that helps women with their health, you don't ever roll it back, period. You just don't. Already, Pivotal has partnered with Vote Run Lead, the political candidate training program that has worked with 55,000 women, of whom nearly 60% have been women of color and 20% from rural America. In 2023 elections, winning alums included Nadia Mohammed of St. Louis Park, Minnesota, who became America's first Somali-American mayor, and Shahana Hanif, New York City's first Muslim woman elected to the city council. Other Pivotal partners include Vote Mama Lobby, launched in 2022 to harness the political power of Democratic moms. The Pipeline Fund, which aims to strengthen a network of diverse progressive leaders with research and funding, and the State's United Democracy Center, which combats disinformation and protects voting rights. Next profile, with photograph by Braylon Dion, Sarah Blakely. Location, Atlanta. Philanthropies, the Sarah Blakely Foundation. Mission, support women through education, entrepreneurship, and the arts. Sarah Blakely's greatest mission is to change the way the world sees and values women, including women themselves. When she founded Spanx in 2000, hardly any primary patent holders were women. In 2024, she pledged to send 1,000 girls in kindergarten through sixth grade to Camp Invention, a five-day camp put on by the National Inventors Hall of Fame with the United States Patent and Trademark Office. She uses her platform to educate other entrepreneurs, to mentor them and say, "You can do this too," French Gates says. In 2019, Blakely partnered with 3DE, a nonprofit dedicated to re-engineering high school education, to create a mindset series, inspired in part by her own integrated curriculum. Wayne Dyer cassette tapes her father gave her that encouraged visualization and manifestation. "I started crying and thought, I've just spent 16 years in school being taught what to think, and no one has ever taught me how to think," says Blakely. Blakely's curriculum is now in more than 60 high schools, impacting some 15,000 students, a number that will double in the coming years. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selection by Mark Hoffman.